Hello, welcome to another episode of Honest to a Malt with myself, Duncan, Whiskey Tip, and Mike, aka Two Puds, Whiskey Wings. And to this week, we've got our sporadic co-host, Ben, Whiskey with Molly. Thanks for joining us, Ben.
You're welcome. Evening, gents.
Yeah, good we are welcome. Evening.
Yeah, good evening to you. Thank you. And Mike, what's the name of the episode today?
So we're on episode 39, and it is Soft Play and Hangovers.
Ah, yep. We're going to talk about whiskey. There's a surprise. Shock horror. And we're going to talk about being dads, because all of us are dads. And maybe some crossover between whiskey and dads as well. And there might even be a shout out for dogs, because we've all got dogs.
Very true. Here's the dog in.
Yeah. Well, I was proposing we called the episode, what did I say?
Dads, Drams and Dogging.
Dadding, dogging and dramming.
Yeah, right? I feel like that would just open it up to a whole different audience that are not interested in dramming.
Too much. All right. So, Ben, you are obviously here for one reason only, and that's to defend your integrity about dry January. So do you want to get that off your chest to start off with, this visit to the pub?
Just for everyone's info out there, it is the 15th of January when we're recording this. So
just when does dry January start, Mike?
I think it's the 1st of January.
1st of January. So, what's the goal of dry January?
Bear with me. Let me just refer
just look it up
to the
online.
Official website. So it is take on 31 days alcohol free during January. That's the official.
In the month of January, January, right? Yeah. Not February?
No. No.
No, okay, yeah. All right. Yeah. How's it going, Ben?
It's going really well, yeah. Depends, you know, I'm not doing dry January for anyone else. I'm certainly not doing it for you two.
That's true.
And I had a little trip to the pub, boys' night, Christmas night, just happened to fall into January because of other things like being a dad. And I hadn't been to the pub in months, so
Oh, you were actually unwell, weren't you, I think?
Yeah, so I made an exception. I went to the pub. I didn't want to go to the pub with the boys and not drink. But I've extended my dry January, call it what you want, abstinence from drinking, right up to the 10th of February when we've got Blind Tasting Consortium. So, you know, in my head, it's fully justified. I've abstained for a longer period of time than I've ever abstained. So, fine. You know, come at
Baby
me.
Baby steps.
Come at me. Bring your friends.
So what you're saying is... What you're saying is you've actually done dry January every day except one day when you went to the pub.
Correct.
And you're going to go all the way to February the 10th.
Correct.
Right? Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be beneficial.
You failed dry January.
I think if I was getting like sponsored for or raising money for charity or something,
set his own goal.
Then I would have failed it. But nah, I can't.
But you're intending on doing dry 31 days instead.
Yeah, it's more than 31 days, but yeah.
So someone did say online...
Maybe it'll catch on, but maybe it's just not quite there yet. Dry 41 also.
It's not as catchy. No, definitely.
You can kind of see why they just call it dry January and not dry, you know, 30 days when you feel like it.
Yeah.
31 days when you feel like it. Someone did say, I'm going to do it as well, but I'm just going to do the days in between. You know? Yeah. Just going to feel like it, like one day off a week.
Odd, it all adds up, doesn't it?
31 weeks later, you've got there.
But it's a bit like all these things. It's a bit like all these, you know, dare I say it, you know, Mother's Day and Valentine's Day. So it's just a thing within me.
Oh, brilliant. Made you're laying, up, you're laying
made
into
up
mums.
Holidays. Okay.
Ben, just to clarify, we're doing a podcast about being whiskey and dads, and you're already laying into mums.
Yeah. You've blamed dry January on single mums is what I took away from that. Struggling single mums. What a horrible man you are.
I also didn't realise Piers Morgan was part of this podcast. I'm really getting hammered here.
All right, so, let's start with Mike then, seeing as he'll have the most interesting answer. Mike, what's been in your glass? What's in your glass at the moment?
Well,
what's been up your ass?
Happy January, both of you. Firstly, that new holiday continues. And I was happy to see that now people around the globe using the hashtag and posting various bottles. I say globe, it's got to one person in France has used it. So I was more than happy.
Right, yeah. One fellow in France.
I've had lots of lady. Oh, how dare you? Look at that. Ah, oh, Duncan. How unfashionable of you.
I thought you were talking about Calderac again.
No.
But you're obviously talking about somebody else.
I am indeed.
Okay. Sorry for that.
That's all right. Yes, we've had many, many drams in my glass this week. I think my favourite has to be the Douglas Lang Provenance Leche 9-year-old. 46%, single cask, just watered down. From 2010, bottled in 20, but the months were out of date, so it's not quite 10 years old.
Right.
I picked it up in a sale somewhere. I think it was like low 30 quid. Absolute bargain, stunning dram. That has been in my glass along with many, many things. And just to help you out, I'm drinking the Ardna Merkin this evening, one of the AD Ventures Club personalised bottle there. Lovely colour. PT looks a bit like tea, if you would, a black tea. So what's in your glass, Duncan?
I'm drinking a variety of 0.0 stuff this evening. I thought, I mean, generally I've just been having water. Yeah, I've got a Captain Morgan Spice Gold 0.0.
Oh my God, what is that like?
I haven't tried it yet.
I'm
about to do that. I will do that on the pod. I've got it in the glass. I've got Gordon's alcohol-free gin.
Rubbish.
Well, I've put it with some sort of mixer, actually, some fancy mixer.
Has it got loads of sugar in it?
Lemon and elder. Well, probably, I don't know. And I've got a can of 0.0 Guinness, so I've gone full on 0.0.
So cutting out the booze, we're keeping up the carbs. It's good to see. I like that.
Well, I haven't. I mean, I've been very healthy. I just thought, seeing as it's a pod generally about drinking, actually what occurred to me was, I'll give that Captain Morgan's a crack, because I haven't tried that at all. And then I thought, whilst I'm doing it, I might as well pour one of those gins.
And have a Guinness.
And have a Guinness. Yeah.
It's the natural. It's what you would have done if you were drinking alcohol.
I thought it would.
While I'm here, I'll have a gin and tonic. Guinness in the glass.
Tune in next week for a rundown on herbal teas.
I am genuinely quite interested to see what that Captain Morgan's like, because I saw that the other day and I went, that could be good, because it's one of those flavors
they
can
recreate. It's come out of the fridge. It's come out of the fridge. So I'm letting it warm up a bit. I need to give it a chance. If I'm trying it out of the fridge, it's going to be even less.
Yeah,
going on. Yeah,
are you both into your 0% stuff?
Not really.
No, I've had what's been decent. Guinness, I don't mind. If I was out, or if I was driving, and I sort of felt the need to fit in socially, I'd have a Guinness 0% happily. Tastes similar, without obviously the viscosity of a real Guinness.
Is it okay to say that it tastes like a shit Guinness at a pub?
I think so.
Is it okay to say that? It's like a bad Guinness.
Yeah.
But that's still Guinness.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. It's still better than a lot of like craft stouts or crap stouts, as it were. What else is decent? 0% Tanqueray gin is absolutely lovely. Really good. That's a highly recommended. That's
better
just
than
as
Gordon's.
Decent as
Shawcross as well is quite good.
I haven't tried that.
0.0 stuff. But
yeah.
It's Jim.
Why are you not into your 0%ers, Ben?
No, if I'm driving or something like that, I just won't bother with 0% stuff. I'll just have a Diet Coke or a water or something like that. I'm not really into it. Although, having said that, I'm giving it a bit short shrift, because I haven't, like, I probably tried them when they were first coming out and they were all absolutely rubbish.
I remember all the beers tasted like some weird banana concoction.
Yeah.
Like really off. But yeah, I think Guinness is 0% is the closest thing to the genuine drink that I've tried.
I was going to say, the other thing that gets me is quite often they're the same price as the real thing, which just gives you a double kicking.
That's them kicking you when you're down, isn't it? You're in dry January, you're already miserable, and then it's, you know, £3.50 for a bottle of 0.0 lager from a pub or whatever, or £4. And you're like, £4?
I always remember the Guinness Zero, because that came out years ago on advertising, and it was water. And it was during the Six Nations when they couldn't advertise alcohol. So they had Guinness Zero, and it was just a pint, of like clear pint. And I was like, that is absolute genius.
Very clever.
Obviously, they've followed through with it now, but
before I forget, so I was in Sweden over the weekend.
Hoody goody. Did you catch any fish
on a plane?
No, Swedish fish
on a train.
What, on an automobile? We go into the hole.
At a corporate event? No, I didn't catch any.
No
fish.
Swedish fish.
No, Swedish. I don't know if that's an analogy or you actually mean, did I literally catch fish? But either way, I'm going to say no. So Anyway, at this event, everyone was boozing. So that was that was the biggest dry January test ever. There were thousands of people at a big event and all on the sauce.
Yeah, but you could have one day off, remember?
Touché!
The setup was beautiful there. Did I even go to an event? I did, yeah. Anyway, I tried Kirin 0.0 lager, and I want to shout that out because a lot of the 0% lagers are pretty terrible. There's a couple that are good, literally just a couple. But the Kirin 0.0, very good. I mean, really, really good. I don't know if it's because I hadn't had a beer in a couple of weeks, but it actually tasted, you know, towards a crisp lager. So shout out to the Japanese folk making that.
I don't think a lager brand's going to sponsor Honest to a Malt, Duncan. You can give, you know, back on the Tamdu bandwagon. Come on.
Who? Hang on, Tamdu are currently doing a poetry competition, so this is my chance to get under their noses. I'm going to have to really craft something for them.
I don't really, unless you start doing like a paper mache each week of a different bottle in, there's like, you can't get their attention anymore. Like, stand outside their offices. And like,
where did that come from? A paper mache? What have you been doing?
Well,
you had Arts and Crafts Week.
To be fair, that is kind of what I've been doing. So I was going on to eventually what's been up my arse, not to sort of steer the conversation back.
Hang on,
to the
we haven't heard what's in Ben's glass yet.
Oh, I assume it's a bit like booze.
Well, it could be a pint. It could be a whiskey. It's obviously dry January is as you feel, isn't it? So
yeah, absolutely. So it is a pint. It is double strength, and it is, as a 45-year-old man, I'm drinking a very manly Robinson's orange juice.
Squash.
Yeah.
Squash.
Some people say adults shouldn't drink squash, but I'm a firm squash drinker.
Who's that fella that was on with, is it Carl Pilkington? He is always
one.
On, he's always on adverts saying that, you know, grown men should drink squash.
Yeah. I've got my Crocs on as well, you know, if you want to go the whole hog. So.
Is your goal for 2024 to meet him in your Crocs drinking squash?
That's it, yeah. Just to annoy him.
Just watch him get really angry, right?
I just had to display my Crocs if you're wondering what the weird noise was in the background.
You can be the one to break to him the news that they're not making pickled onion Monster Munch anymore.
What?
At the time.
What?
No.
When he was in China in one of the episodes, I think he was basically living off pickled onion Monster Munch because he wouldn't eat any of the food in China.
Yeah. Love it.
Kit Kats or whatever.
I didn't know that.
All right.
So squash, or to our Scottish friends, which is weird, diluting juice. Diluting juice, which is what baffles me, like how that's happened.
What? Right. Juice that you dilute. It's not that far of a reach.
I know, but like, I suppose it makes more sense.
Squash is weirder.
Yeah.
It's just that you know squash. It makes much more sense to call it what you're doing, right? Rather than have a separate word for it.
What about cordial?
Yeah, cordial. Cordial's used in Scotland.
Weird.
Yeah. Okay, so, Mike, you talked about paper mache. What's been up your arse then?
What's been up my arse is everyday normal person auctions. And I have picked up a few little bargains this week at a normal auction, but whilst I was looking at said bargains, I came across someone paying or bidding and winning £39 for a bottle of Ardmore. So plus fees and delivery, you're potentially looking at £45 for a bottle of Ardmore. That's £22 in Waitrose.
Why is he doing that?
And I was looking at it, it was the auctioneer, and he was like, oh, because they had a Macallan 12 before it.
Hang on, this is you watching an online live auction.
A normal auction, not a whiskey auction, a normal auction. Right. And there was a Macallan 12, and I was like, oh, I wonder if this has snuck in past people. And it was like, and we're starting the bid at 20, 200, 500. So I was like, nope, that's the end of that then. So just kept on just to see what it went for. And oh, and we've got another rare malt, an Ardmore. And these people must have just been like, oh, I got a really good one here. The other one went for like £1,000. This one
Was it Ardmore Legacy?
Just the bog standard Ardmore that you get
I think that's called Legacy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ardmore Legacy.
The cheap one. So they would have paid £45 for that one. So that's been up my arse. A little bit of stupidness on behalf of people buying at auctions, the auctioneers, and then just following on from that, I did buy an old desk for the whiskey room. So I thought, I'll go online very quickly and have a look at oak restoration just to see. There can't be that much on it. And essentially, there's about 4,000 videos, mainly of idiots that don't know anything about woodwork, trying to tell you how to restore an oak bench.
Hang on, are you about to tell us that you then made your own YouTube video? So there was 4,001 idiots.
There will be. Yeah. No, it took me about 8 hours to go through and find in the end like a sort of a master furniture maker who talked through it properly. So yeah, YouTube, algorithms, pretend woodworkers and auctions are up my ass. So that's where I am this week. Your face is painting a picture of some delightful rum goodness.
Why is the rum gone?
That's really bad.
Are you going to throw up?
You'd have to have it with mixer. That was a mistake to drink that neat.
What does that taste like?
Sickly sweet, I imagine.
Quite a lot of caramel, some spice, but like not a nice caramel.
It's basically just colouring, is it?
Yeah.
It tastes chemically. Old dried flowers, like rotting petals. That's
weirdly
very odd.
That matches the tasting notes on the back of the bottle.
I'm just going to see if they have any tasting notes.
They can't have, surely.
I think as a suggestion, Mike, Duncan's face over the last 20 seconds is prime for a meme. You know, like when you put like different like phrases up and it's got somebody looking really disgusted.
Yeah.
It really hangs around in your mouth.
It's not too dissimilar to, you know, when you give a baby lemon juice for the first time. That's kind of the vibe Duncan's going with at the moment.
It's like, I'm going to try it again, though, because it's horrific, but in a sort of interesting way.
It's bad, but you like it. There's a little perversion.
I just can't get my head around how it's so... I guess they just had a discussion about it in the room and went, do you think anyone's going to be stupid enough to try it neat? And they went, no. Don't worry about it. Everyone's going to have it with mixer.
No one drinks rum straight anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Not laughing about my diluting juice, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whilst Duncan's torturing himself, Ben, has anything been up your arse at all in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, so last couple of weeks, and like I'm pretty sure this is like happens to everyone, but it just seems to be happening to me nearly every time. We've had a bit of sickness, as Duncan mentioned, in the house. You know, it's went round the family, so you know you combat that with a bit of paracetamol, a bit of cold and flu tablets, and you know when you open the box of tablets, it's got the I don't know what do you call it? It's not the instructions, but like the bit of paper inside
the giant leaflet.
Yeah,
and it's like a disclaimer for them, really.
Yeah.
You might die.
Yeah, don't.
I mean, you probably won't.
Don't take 20 of these with half a bottle of whiskey, type, you know, thing.
Yeah,
and it's folded over the two tablet inserts, and you can open at one end where you can just take the tablets out, or you can open at the other end where you've got to take the paper out and it's folded over. I have a 100% record of opening it at the wrong side.
I was just about to say, I know what you're gonna say,
and it's always what the curved end.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you've got hands, right? You can just pull it out. What's the problem?
Because you have a 50-50 chance of getting this right, wrong every time.
Right.
I really feel you there.
Yeah, I can relate to that, but I still it doesn't take that long to correct, does it? So what you're saying really is it's more of an indication about the ebb and flow of your life currently.
No,
right?
it's just
frustration.
Also, I have an engineering degree, and all I can think is these are put together in a factory where all the boxes are aligned the same, things are put in the same size. It's a machine that does it, right? They're not hand done. So how can you not work out what side is the open side and what side is the closed side? It should be the same.
Why wouldn't they have one side closed and one side as a like an opening option?
More expensive to put on the packet.
Probably. Yeah, I was going to ask why isn't it always the same end so you could
That's
learn?
That's what
it?
I mean. It's not the same end. It's weird.
The boxes must switch around. Like they must like be they must be like all in a giant pile. And then they get filtered down, and then they just shove the stuff inside. So they're not consistent, right?
I think I've got a massive mound of those, what I would call small little editions of the Telegraph, and 4 million bits of paper folded into one behind the bedroom sort of bedside table, just launched in frustration every time you do it.
I mean, I'll hold my hands up and say to the listeners that you know it's first world problems, but it's really annoying.
I love it.
Oh,
how about you, Dan? What's been up your ass?
Slow walking. People walking really slowly. And I don't mean on the street. You can just go around them. I mean at giant events where you're filtering around in small corridors and you're forced like sardines to walk behind people. And then what happens is when you, because you've been walking so, you know, like to walk, I mean, as slowly as you can possibly walk, right? The absolute slowest you can walk with people everywhere. And you're trying to get around people, but you can't really, so you're forced to walk slowly. And then what happens is when people get a bit of space, they've like turned into like these weird, like zombie creatures. So they you see them in front and they've just got like a little 10 feet. They could just accelerate. They could like speed up and get somewhere. You imagine thousands of people going around these corridors outside of this event. And then you can see and you're thinking, go on, go for it, go for it. And then their bodies, they've got into this, they've got into the slowness, and then they can't. They're just like walking. Like, and so you're always going sideways. So that was very frustrating, slow walking.
You can take the boy out of London.
Yeah, that's actually true. People do walk faster in London. Yeah. Yeah. And New York. Oh, my God, they walk so fast in New York. I have heard. I have never been to see, but I would love to see how fast they walk in New York.
I think I used to sort of think, I'm really good at getting through crowds, and it was from rugby, because you used to like sidestepping people and stuff. I think I'm a bit, I can get a proper shift on through a crowd, like without touching anyone.
I was cutting through people, but I still had to walk slowly some of the time. Otherwise, you're just pushing people out of the way. It was so bad.
Oh, no, it's tiptoes. I like tiptoes. Oh, sorry. But I do shift people if I'm like, oh, sorry. And I'll just
I would love to have seen that, Mike.
I move the shoulders. And I do on the tube. Like, I push people out of the way in a nice way. I just maneuver them. And they're like, oh, sorry, every time.
Yeah. I had the antithesis of that, Mike, when last time I was in London with my dad in the tube. And you guys all know, but there's a flow to the tube, right? You just go. You've got to keep moving fast. But my dad's in his 70s from Ireland. And he's a typical older Irishman where he sees a woman and he's like, oh, after you, love me, and here we go. And he messed up that tube station so bad from constantly stopping and letting people in front of him and stuff. I had to just grab his arm and say, like, Dad, just keep walking. You're messing up.
People thought there was some type like critical incident because just build up of people so everywhere. I love it. That was similar when my family came down from Wales, get them on the tube, and it's just like shell shock of just how many people. And it's like, get on the escalator and immediately they're just going to stand on the left. I'm like, stand on the other side. Why? People... No, everyone's in too much of a rush. And I'm like, they're not going to stop because you think they're rushing.
If you ever get the chance and you go to Mumbai, if you haven't been, you can do the thing where basically you stand outside of where the train pulls up. You don't move. You don't even move. And it's so tightly packed that you just get moved onto the train. And it's very surreal. So you're not moving really, other than just making sure you don't fall over. And the whole group just sort of slowly gets onto the train.
Just hands in your pocket, protecting your phone and wallet.
I guess you've also got to hope that that's your train.
Actually, my wife did go once about 8 hours wrong on a train in India. In the absolute lowest class.
On the roof.
Ever comes on the pod, if she ever comes on the pod, we'll get her to explain it. It was pretty horrendous. Anyway, the other thing was, you have things on your bucket list, so this is a positive thing. Do you ever remember Rednecks, the band? I saw them live doing Cotton Eye Joe.
Shut up.
Serious.
That's massive. That's huge.
And it was huge. And they must have played it about 5 times in their set.
Well, obviously. They got no other... What other songs do they have? And up next, we've got... We've got Cotton Eye Joe. All right. I haven't heard this one for 2 minutes.
It's like the Family Guy Star Wars with the Cantina Band. What song would you like? Play that same song again.
Yeah, it was a bit like that. It was like peaks and troughs. So they just came back to it like every 3 to 4 songs and played it again. Everyone just went mental again for like about, an hour or whatever.
I bet you as the night went on and people were getting absolutely smashed, they were reacting like it's the first time they'd heard it all over again each time.
This was a Scandinavian party. So Swedish and Norwegian people. They were just going absolutely crazy because they're a Scandinavian. I think they're half some Swedish, some Norwegian. Anyway, they were just going bonkers. Yeah, they're going absolutely bonkers. And everyone's dressed as cowboys, just, So like, imagine like 3,000 people dressed as cowboys dancing to Cotton Eye Joe.
What were you wearing?
Well, I was wearing a cowboy hat, obviously. I thought I wouldn't have fit in, would I?
Dungarees, no shirt on under the dungarees.
Chaps, topless.
He was there in normal clothes, chaps, cowboy, topless. If you catch my drift.
Yeah, and a see-through hat. Just
the bells were swinging.
Yeah. So, whiskey thing that's been up my arse, and this is Mike's fault. Because Mike makes these embargoes so competitive, I now feel like I must at least give it a crack. Mm-hmm. And I had a watch list on Scottish Whisky Auctions. And I was on the plane coming back and I was like, oh, just have a look at how it's going. Bargains to be had everywhere. Can't buy anything. I would have probably bought, I'm not going to exaggerate, if on a normal month, I would have bought 4 or 5 bottles.
Nice. And you bought zero.
Did you check the finishing price, though? Because they all jumped, I thought, quite a lot.
They jumped a bit, but all the ones, I mean, I'm not saying every single bottle was a bargain, but there was still some that were too high, in my opinion, but there was some that I would have bought.
Did you have your eye on that Glenn Talker 6-year-old?
No.
Ooh.
Should I have?
No, I just, because I bid on, I think my top bid was like 40 quid, and I think it only went for 45, and I was like, I bet you that's Duncan that's bought that.
No, I didn't buy anything. That's what happens, you get outbid, you're like, Duncan.
Yeah.
Duncan, someone's outbid me on Tockers, it's got to be Duncan.
Yeah. If it's like a Ben Nevis and I get outbid, I'm always like, PS Whiskey.
Yeah.
You're probably just driving each other's prices up by like 30 quid.
I know, really, we should just have a group and people should just message each other and say, come on,
is anyone bidding on this? Because I'm trying to. All right, you can have this one. That's not a bad idea, actually. That might be the way to bring down the auction houses. Open bidding.
I'm just going to open my phone up now and have a look to see what I thought was a bargain.
Mm, yeah, I've got mine open. The amount of Springbanks on that auction was ridiculous.
Oh, really?
What did they go for? What did like Springbank 18 go for in the end, or Springbank
Palo?
Like, oh, local barley's have come all the way down to about 200 quid, haven't they?
2011 local barley went for 220.
I saw bourbons, like a few Tennessee ones. There was a Tennessee 19-year-old that went for 70 quid, and I would have picked that up for 70 or 75 in the usual other auction. So I was a bit gutted about that. Would have loved that. Haven't got that one. And Glenmurray 2001 Distillery Selection, second for the Rosso, 60 quid. That's okay.
Glenmurray.
There was, maybe you're probably right there, Ben. It wasn't crazy low, was it?
Yeah, I felt it jumped. Not that it was expensive, but it kind of got to that point where you're like, Fiverr plus the fees, it's probably about retail. And it was only really worth it if you couldn't get it at retail.
Oh, Old Forester 1920 Prohibition. 65 quid. See, I've been watching that for ages to try to get it for under 70, and this is the 1 month. I can't.
Oh, really? So basically, it's my fault you've missed out.
Yeah, it's your fault. Pictures. 100% blame you.
I just picked up just two cheap ones. I just picked up a Campbelltown Lock and a Kilcairn Heavily Peated. 70.
How much did they go for?
72 quid all in, including fees.
That's decent.
Yeah, not spectacular, but decent.
That's probably 10 or off retail. Yeah. If not 15 with delivery.
I'll pick it up. Don't need delivery.
Oh, yeah, you know what I'm saying? It would have been 15 quid if it was delivery from a shop or something. But that's fair enough.
Before we get on to talking about being dads, I listen to other whiskey podcasts, so I wanted to do a little shout out. So on the plane journey, I was like, I listened to something I haven't listened to before. So I had a trawled down the listings and I found a little gem. This is a big recommendation from me. Yeah. So I found a little gem called the Whiskey Brothers podcast.
Yeah.
A couple of Aussies. So I want to give them a bloody shout out. Hey.
Ah, that sounds bloody great.
Sounds bloody great, mate. So they do actually sound exactly like that. So last episode was May 2023. So don't expect any really current content, although I think they have a YouTube, but I don't really go on YouTube.
You should.
So they did an episode in May. They did an episode in May 2020. I want to.
May 2020?
May 2020, I went back, I picked one that I thought would be interesting to listen to, and it happened to be called What Does Jim Think?
Oh, God.
No, it's all right. Well, obviously, they actually talk about how they think he overscores at the end of the episode, but that isn't what I wanted to quote, because the funny thing is...
Jim Murray, for anyone listening.
Yeah. Like, the, you know...
the former whiskey also, reviewer.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously, who was also, highlighted for his misuse of language in his writing by Becky Paskin in 2020 as well. But that isn't what this is about. It's more their use of language, as in, it's very funny. So to quote, I had to write some of it down. So one of them says, I don't know if they're joking or if they're being serious. So I sort of suggest you listen to it and figure it out for yourself. If you can see the legs, if you're listening in, and then a short time after, someone says, let's get the nostrils dancing. And someone says, play around with your nostrils. My right nostril is not doing anything. I'm big on using the one nostril. The right offers a lot more. 1.5 nostrils. And then, it's really surreal. They just spend this whole segment talking about like the use of their nostrils. It really tickled me. It's one of the best things I've listened to in ages. It was really funny. Whether it's meant to be funny or not, I don't know. But shout out to the Whiskey Brothers podcast. Check it out. You can go and find it on Spotify. Give it a listen. Yeah.
Or don't, and keep listening to us.
people can consume more than one content. You know that, right?
Oh, can they?
Can they?
I don't even listen to this. I don't listen to this back. I don't listen to anything.
Did you see the thing doing the rounds on, it wasn't social media, it was a WhatsApp doing the rounds about the American wine connoisseur that reviewed Buckfast, not realizing what Buckfast was?
No.
Would you like me to read some of it?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
Okay. Screwcap took it off about 30 minutes before to bring in some air. Apparently made by monks in England. Decided to try while cooking dinner. Poured into a glass. First glance, it has a very inky, almost brownish colour that you see in older wines. Very syrupy. Liquid clings to the side of the glass when swirled. Almost 15% ABV. Stuck my nose in and was hit with something I've never experienced before. Barnyard funk, in a bad way. Almost like a dead animal in a bird's nest. A mix of flat Coca-Cola and caramel with a whiff of gunmetal. On the palate, overwhelming sweetness and sugar. Cherry cola mixed with Benadryl. Unlike anything I've ever tasted. I'm not sure what this liquid is, but it's not wine. I'm actually not sure what it is, but it tastes like something a doctor would prescribe. A chemical concoction of the highest degree. Can only compare it to a Four Loko, whatever that is. Managed to make it through a couple of small glasses, but not much more. Has absolutely ruined the evening drinking-wise for me, as I tried to drink a nice Bordeaux after, but the iron-like metallic sweet aftertaste I just couldn't get out of my mouth even after a few glasses of water. I don't drink a lot of coffee regularly, so I have a mild heart palpitations from the caffeine after just drinking a bit of this and feel a slight migraine. In conclusion, an ungodly concoction made by seemingly godly men. I believe the Vatican needs to send an exorcist over to Buckfast Abbey, as the devil's work is very clearly present here. After tasting this wine, the way I can feel can only be described as akin to being under a bridge on one's knees, orally pleasuring a vagrant while simultaneously drinking liquefied meth through a dirty rag. I drank a lot of wines in my life and will never forget this one.
Oh my days.
It was really good of the local police officers to give him a pen and paper in his cell as well, because I don't know anyone that drinks Buckfast and doesn't end up getting nicked.
Yeah.
Hey. That's
amazing.
Those tasting notes that you read out,
yeah.
You chuck a bit of peat in there. That's a good Isla.
Yeah.
Oh. I don't get what his problem is.
Yeah.
You peat that up. That would be a banging.
That's
that would a be a banging.
PX whiskey, isn't it?
Yeah.
Saying that though, I remember getting. I can't remember if it was Master & Malt or Whiskey Exchange that did the special edition Buckfast one, and it was an April Fool's whiskey. And I was like, I'm going to buy it because that's clearly a joke and it's going to be something special. Like it's going to be, I don't know, I thought it was going to be an indie Glenmorangie or something because of the way they were saying about orange and all this stuff. No, it was finished. It was in bug cask and it was disgusting. I was like, that is awful. So I shipped that whole bottle straight up to Alistair Spirit and Wood. Have it, mate. Right. Not interested, yeah. All yours. Straight to a Scottish person because they appreciate the Buckfast. Clearly a lot more than a Welsh palate does.
Scottish mouths must just be made stronger. Iron brew, Buckfast, just all things that should really just be...
Everything heavily fried.
Your mouth should never recover from, really.
And if you don't like it, just batter it and deep fry it. Makes everything better.
Yeah. Do you remember Mountain Dew as well?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'd love to do a test. We once built Mountain Dew on the worktop at home.
Yeah.
You know, like those... Not like an expensive worktop, you know, the ones that are like lamp, you know, like lamp.
Formica.
Whatever it is, I don't know. But anyway, that Mountain Dew, if you even left it on for like a few minutes, it's permanently stained. I mean, like you'd never get rid of it. And I'd like to see that done side by side with Iron Brew to see which
one
is more dangerous.
What you need, mate, is a bit of oxalic acid. Just mix it with 1 part to 10 parts water. Just leave it on for half an hour. Then a bit of soda crystals in water. After about half an hour, and that'll come straight out, mate.
Beautiful.
There
That's
you go.
Tip, Mike.
That's your tip.
Remember that next time.
It's a new feature on Honesty & Malt. What Mike's weekly furniture tip?
No, it's all just one big setup for Mike to springboard onto his furniture and
my cleaning channel. Upcycled hipster furniture coming soon to Broadway Market. A £20 desk, which I'm going to charge £600 to someone in a check shirt with a big beard, ironically.
Right, so are we on to talk about being dads then? Yeah.
Yes. Should we lay the groundwork as to where everyone is currently?
Okay, everyone's a dad.
Yeah, well, yes, it gets a bit more complicated than that, doesn't it?
All right, then you start then, Mike.
So, as the listeners will be aware, I am 3 months into a new human. And
you might want to rephrase that, just saying.
First human I've created. And oh, dear God, yes. My child is 3 months old.
I'm editing this one, 100%.
Yeah, so
trust the process.
First time dad, 3 months old. That's where I am. Where are you, Duncan?
Well, Maria and I have a daughter called Eva, and she is past the 4 mark. She is at school. Okay, that's good. And we are having another baby in about 3 weeks. So then I'll have 2, which is like when you level when you try to play a computer game on hard mode. I think that's my observation of having 2 children. So I think that any whiskey tastings might be a thing of the past. We will have to see. And Ben?
Yeah, so me and my wife have a 6-year-old boy, just recently turned 6, and he has only been with us for 9 months because we adopted him.
Nice.
It's a beautiful thing that you've done there.
That is a mega thing to have done.
Yeah. I mean, sincerely, I mean, said it to you before, but I mean, not enough people adopt, so.
Yeah, no, it's the age as well. That must have been, that's some big decision-making to commit to that.
Yeah, it is, but the one, well, there's been many takeaways from it, but the one takeaway is the strength of a child's mind to just cope with everything that's going on and
stress.
Cope with it in his stride has been phenomenal. Not with like its little bumps along the way, but you just, you know, he's been fantastic.
Yeah.
Are there points where you've just gone, I'm laughing because he's been naughty, he's done something, but you've got to take your hat off. I love it.
Yeah,
I love it. Because that usually comes with that fighting spirit.
I think the ones we've had, though, is like the phrase, you know, out of the mouth of babes, where we've been... not that we're like this all the time, but we've been trying to teach him a bit of like table manners and, you know, not just reach your hand out and grab food and shove it down your face. So a bit of table manners. So, you know, how to leave your knife and fork when you're leaving the table, ask to be excused from the table, this, that and the other. And he was getting really into it one night because there was promises of amazing puddings and stuff like that if he had good manners. And we were sitting eating dinner at the breakfast bar in the kitchen. And he was getting all his manners right brilliantly. He looked around to me and he said, "May I be excused?" And I said, "Yes, you can." And he stepped down off his stool and looked at me with a like totally serious, solemn face and went, "Apology accepted." And just turned around and walked off.
I absolutely love it.
Like not knowing what apology accepted really meant, but thinking it was some sort of good manner thing that would be appropriate to say just now.
I love that he's gone, "That apology phrase accepted is decent. I'm going to use that the first available opportunity that comes to me."
That's what they do. They just try stuff and see how you react.
Yeah. I can imagine that experience. I've had something very similar. When I worked in Camp America, the first year I did it, my kids were like 15 turning 16, and I had to teach them how to use a knife and fork because Americans eat with their hands and have no table manners, is what I've learned. They don't develop that until like college. So they're very, very backwards up until about sort of 18 years old.
Just on the table etiquette thing, that's actually really it's a good idea what you're doing, because I know one person who whenever he finishes eating his meal, you would put your knife and fork together, right, to indicate that you've finished eating, right?
Yeah.
This is what everyone does. But he does the opposite. He leaves them apart, like to indicate that you're still eating, and he swears blind that this is how they've always done it in their family. And I'm like, but nobody else does this.
Are they from? So, is there like a cultural history, or are they like?
No, no, it's
ethics?
Just English. No, just English. But it's one of those things that just annoys me so much when at the table, and I have to like have a little internal chat with myself. Like, Duncan, it doesn't matter.
It does matter, Duncan.
It doesn't.
It does matter. Of course, it matters. So, raise it next time. Next time, in fact, next time you're going out, tell me where you are, and I'll come in and go.
You'll come round, yeah,
mate.
I've tried, but I you see, by teaching the table manners, you're going to help helping Madea to, you know, to conform with everyone else. But then if anybody ever does what this person does to me, to torture me when we're at a table, he won't be able to handle it. Because I'm like freaking out. And I used to try mentioning it, and he'd just be like, "Just that's what I do. You're doing it wrong." So, like, I was trying to think of stuff like, obviously it's a joy to have kids. Greatest joy. So I was trying to think of things that were a little dicey. So when Eva was at nursery, I remember when she first realised that we were into whiskey, like Maria and I. Mm. And we obviously liberally used the word whiskey. Or should have a whiskey? Should we pour whiskey? Would you want to have a whiskey in the evening? Because we both drink whiskey. Right? And so Eva cottoned onto this. And then we must have used the word whiskey too much, to the point where she would be down nursery talking, "Oh, Mum and Daddy are having a whiskey. Are you going to have a whiskey later?" And I was like, they won't know that it's like classy whiskey. They're just going to think we're total. Because to most people, if you say Mummy and Daddy like whiskey or going to have a whiskey, and you mention it a lot, they're going to be thinking like Jack Daniels.
They're not even thinking, mate, they're thinking like own brand, Tesco value.
Yeah. So then we had
Little like quarter bottle ones just getting smashed.
Yeah. So then we had to come up with a code word for it. Right. So we had to use like a
vodka.
Different word. Buckfast.
Yeah.
They won't know what that is in nursery. It's fine.
Shatter Earth to Pap.
TV show or something, right?
Oh, that's decent.
Yeah. So have you had anything like that? You won't have done, but have you had any words that you, Ben, that you have accidentally, you shouldn't have said that they've started to say?
I don't, but my wife is regularly being grassed up by our son to me. Because he was out in the car and Mummy was driving and she said a bad word. You know, just that reactionary when like somebody pulls out in front of you or doesn't indicate or something, it just comes out of you sometimes.
They can't not grass people up, can they, young kids?
They love it.
I've seen this from school. I feel like the first 18, no, that's, I feel like the first 20-ish years of a young person's life is just working towards not being a grass. Like, they come, they're born, they learn to talk and walk. They then are, like, if there's a scale of 0 to 100% in terms of how much you could grass on people, they're like 100%. Yeah. They'll grass on anybody immediately. Like, we were at a cafe and they had taken cushions off a chair or chairs or something, and they were putting them in a walkway up steps, and they were jumping on them like they were jumping on stepping stones. Mm. Kind of cute, but in people's way. And so I went and said, "Look, you can't have them here or whatever. You should use these things instead, and you should use them over there." And they got a bit upset with me. And I said to Eva, I said, "No, I said, behave, listen. I said, you can still play with them, but over here." And then literally, I'd only gone back to sit down and keep drinking my coffee. And then her friend came over to me, walked up and went, "It wasn't my idea." It wasn't my idea. It was Eva's idea. I'm like, I've just had a chat with you. I didn't even talk to you. She was just coming over to make sure 100% she doubled down on it and fully made sure 100% the blame was on Eva. They're like 100% grasses. Like in that situation that she didn't even need to grass, but still did just to be 100% sure. And so like, there's like, I would love to see this curve as they come down and they learn that maybe grassing isn't the best idea.
We had one at his birthday party. So we invited everyone in his class. It's a mixture of boys and girls from his class. And the boys are like typical 5-6-year-old boys, because we had a bouncy castle there as well. They were just kicking hell out of each other. And just, you know, but that's how they play. Not in a violent, fairly violent, but they were having fun until somebody hit somebody too hard. But basically there was this one little girl there, and she kept, because I was the sort of adult in charge, she kept coming over and like pulling on my trouser leg. And but the grassing was awful. It was like, "Excuse me, Adam is shouting very loudly on the bouncy castle." And I was like, "Well, I'm sure Adam's just having fun. It'll be fine.
He'll be all right."
Five minutes later it was, "Stephen has went on the bouncy castle and he's still got one shoe on." You know, it's like, all right, give it a rest.
Oh, my days. Call the police.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'd do? I go, Adam, Stephen, come here. Do you know what she's done?
Yeah.
She's told me you're shouting too loud.
Oh, my.
She's told me you've got one shoe. Go and sort her out. No one's looking. Learn life the hard way.
You'll have your own little school to deal with toddler grasses, right? Young kid grasses.
It's a gap in the market.
It is a gap in the market, yeah. So you mentioned soft play, I think. Was that what you were talking about, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, like, he loves a bit of rough and tumble, a bit of soft play. And I always, you know, we tend to do, like, blind tasting on a Saturday night and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I get my pass to go and sit in the other room and do that and stay up to whatever o'clock in the morning drinking whiskey, probably get a little bit too loud on the microphone, you know, annoy the rest of the household.
Never, Ben, never.
Till you fall asleep.
So at 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning, guess where I'm going? I'm going to the soft swimming. Play or swimming or whatever.
I don't go to swim, but I think swimming's the worst because the room's really hot. And so if you're hungover, like to be in the heat.
Are you allowed to go swimming? This is my thing. Or do you have to just sit and watch?
You just have to sit and
you
watch.
You have to watch?
Yeah.
Oh, that's rubbish.
Yeah.
You can't even go on the slides.
No slides where I am.
Rubbish.
It depends on how are you chatting to people when you're hungover, because I always think if you go to the park or soft play, there's inevitably like a parent that will talk to you. And so if you're like on a major hangover, maybe you just want to...
No, I just... Like, you can't... I don't know if you ever watched Father Ted, but I just wear my I Shot JR t-shirt and other parents can talk to
you. Just, yeah.
Hello, Father!
You got these stick-on blisters for your face, right? Yeah. You just stick them on your face. You go to makeup first. You get up about 8 a.m. You're in makeup from 8 to about 9, and you're ready with your t-shirt on.
Yeah, that keeps the parent chat to a minimum, to be honest.
That's quite a big thing, isn't it, of like parenting, I've discovered, is...
What, the other parents?
Forced new friends. Like, yeah, don't get me wrong. Obviously, my new circle of people I communicate with in my antenatal group are wonderful people, and I would never say anything else. But you basically just get, right, this is your antenatal group, and you have to now speak to them for like 2 years or whatever it's going to be. Luckily, mine are genuinely decent. But
That's not what you said to me yesterday.
Okay, apart from like Bill. Yeah, Bill's a knobber, but the rest of them decent.
I was at soft play for a kid's birthday, and what I've learned to do now is, because I can only handle so much small talk. Everyone's different. Some people are like masters at small talk. It's not my thing. I like to talk about ideas, other stuff, creative stuff, whiskey. So I just chuck whiskey out as early as possible in the conversation. We could be talking about anything. Someone could be, there'll be a couple of dads there, right? I'm just fastest route to see if anyone's interested in whiskey at all, right? So that someone could say, "Oh, do you want a coffee?" And I'd be like, "Oh yeah, coffee." And then I'll find a way to like slip it in. And then someone bites.
Go, I wish it was an Irish one.
Do you like whiskey? I go, "Yeah, I do." Do you? That's it. And then
Done.
Just talk as much about whiskey as possible. I was at soft play for kids' birthday, and two dads ordered like 100 quid's worth of Master of Mull, and they barely ever drink in the run up to Christmas. I was like, that's a bargain as well. I was like, pass me your phone.
Two tipsy and two dads.
Gotta get that. I was like, that'll see you through to, you know. That's not my idea of, I can handle that. I can handle talking about football, but anything else in between, unless it's like ideas related. Especially on a hangover. I'm like,
just switch off.
Save me. Yeah. Schools. You'll have to talk about schools. This school. That school.
The school one was another one. So we went to our first like Christmas fair, whatever it was, at school, and each class had a table. So I went up to my son's
table. I'm dreading this shit.
And it's like,
Mike, you're gonna hate it.
Look, here's like a paper plate that he's painted, and here's a cup that he stuck a couple of sticks in,
rubbish,
and stuff like that. Well, you don't say that, do you? Because it's your child. So you've got to go, oh, that's really good.
He's a genius.
Well done, so good. And then the school has the cheek to go, well, you can buy one for 2 quid, or you can buy all four for a fiver.
What, that your kids made?
Yeah, it's a sweatshop.
Surely you own it.
No.
I'd be like, sorry, you've hired my child to make products, and you're now selling them.
Yeah. And
I genuinely can't believe that.
So,
I've never heard
so,
of
it. So I went from
standing... Oh, my child, £10 an hour, minimum wage.
Surely you could have taken it and offered a donation. Is that what actually happened, or did you actually have to buy it?
Go to the PTA, well, didn't it? The money-making...
You didn't have to buy it. I mean, I went from full on, oh, wow, that's amazing, you're so artistic, to, well, it's not worth a fiver.
That's so good. Really?
He'll be in
good.
Therapy.
Can we take
he'll
it
be
home?
In therapy
Absolutely
like,
not. No.
Yeah.
He'll be 30 years old, he's in therapy, and he'll go, and it's just, it wasn't worth a fiver.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be like, right, go over to that man with a big beard and a check shirt and sell it to him for 500% profit, because he'll buy it.
Just to clarify, tell him I did buy it.
Well, I was like, oh, that's best, because otherwise your missus will be like, how much you spent on whiskey?
Yeah.
You can't spend £5 on that. Like, well, it's because I spent so much money on whiskey, I can't afford this.
Exactly.
Now.
Can't afford the £5 paper.
Yeah.
Dad said I upcycled a plate and some macaroni, and it's now worth $2,000.
Yeah. This is always good. We both drive. Mike, Lara also drives, right?
Yeah.
Does your missus drive, Ben?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So best one is you're getting in the car going
badly
drive
by the sounds of the grass you live with,
and you say. Do you mind driving? And as soon as you sat down the car, you say, just as they're starting to drive and they've pulled out, you go, I just need to order some whiskey.
Yeah, well,
there's always a reason for offering up the driving. And it's usually like if an auction or something is closing. Mm. And I'm like, knock yourself out, you can drive. And it's like immediately, she's like, why, what are you doing?
The thing is, I can't really complain because my wife doesn't really drink, so she's always up for driving if we're somewhere, like if you're going to a wedding or something like that, she's quite happy to drive.
Taxi.
No, we are like rock, paper, scissors. Like this.
Yeah.
The best way to do it, Mike, is share it 50-50. You drive there and she drives back. It's only fair.
Yeah.
That is very true.
You obviously, I don't know if you've done this yet, Mike, your daughter's too young, but... Have you done the inevitable first sniff of whiskey?
Too young? Are you kidding me? She's 3 months, mate.
Right.
She's been sampling different drams for ages, like on the nose.
On the gums.
And I'll make like the little smelling like action. I go, and then just put one under there for a second, little Isla. And she's like, she shakes her head and is like, oh, okay. And give her again. And she'll giggle. I'm like, yes, you've already got it. I'm going to train you up to work at a distillery. I want free whiskey for the rest of my life.
That's your master plan for a master blender.
Well, my master plan is that she goes and gets like a chemistry degree and then goes and works within the sort of scientific side of whiskey. That's the plan. Or a rocket scientist.
You've got your master plan so messed up. We're taking our boy to tennis lessons, golf lessons, football.
High-end sports.
High-end sports, high-value sports. High-end sports.
I'm going with odds. The chances of success
are far better. Very unlikely to succeed in any of those. As has been proven in the darts recently, darts is your best bet. You can almost win the world championship at 16.
Take your boy to the pub.
250K, sit at the pub, crack on.
Did you see the geezer that won the lottery and then went... I'm just going to become a darts player. Never played darts in his life. And because he hasn't got a bloody job, just spent all day playing darts. And he's now a pro dart player because he's managed to just, he can practice all day, doing nothing, no worries, relaxed, chilled. I'm a millionaire. Don't need this. Boom. From nowhere to like a professional darts player in a couple of months. Classic.
So, what are you saying then, Mike? You should go around the streets and for homeless people put a darts board up outside.
I mean, that was a big leap. That was a massive leap.
So I'll do you guys a favour. Don't have food or anything, bedding or maybe some help.
I'm having a flashback to the Buckfast tasting notes.
Darts board for you. So anyway, I try to get Eva to sniff whiskey sometimes. She doesn't like it. And sometimes I even give a waft to the dog, to Leo, and he's like, he doesn't like it either. And actually, Leo also won't let me do any pictures around him. Any picture you've ever seen with Leo in, with a whiskey or a whiskey glass or whiskey bottle, and I've done a few, that's really hard work. As soon as you start putting the glass or the whiskey bottle near to him, he's like, what are you doing? Why are you invading my personal space? He's like,
are you kidding me?
I don't want to be near that bottle or that glass. Yeah, he like gets up and moves or you know, shifts his position or whatever or turns
Barley
his bum to
you. Fights me to get in my whiskey glass. He loves it. If I like dip a whiskey and put my finger out, wherever he is, he's running over like, ah, yes.
That's because he's half French bulldog, so he doesn't have a sense of smell.
But the biggest exporter, or the second biggest exporter now of whiskey is the French, so maybe it's just genetic.
No, those bulldogs just cannot smell at all. Like, they literally can't smell.
He's also half Cocker Spaniel, so can smell amazingly.
So he might be in between then.
Yeah.
I think I'm happy to say, and I think I'm right in saying this, that Molly is the only dog that's ever done a guest slap on Jeff Whiskey's channel.
Jeff Whiskey's YouTube channel.
Yeah, we got Molly to do a guest slap.
Yeah. Did
you like
Molly,
did you
with
a
tail
her
with
her
hand?
With her paw?
Paw up and hit
paw
it.
Paw with a paw. Yeah, nice. Okay.
Challenge accepted. I'm now writing down Barley Slap.
So, like, serious question. You mentioned earlier, I think the hardest thing about being a parent in terms of, like, for Whiskey is trying to juggle bedtime around tastings and things like that, right? I don't know, like, we both wait with Eve until she's gone to sleep. So some parents just put their kids in bed and it's up to them and just leave them. But we don't. We stay with her until she's gone to sleep. And it might be that you make it in time, but you've literally just been in a dark room for ages, like lying down, almost probably drifting off yourself. And then you've immediately got to snap out of it. Run, get ready, get the glasses out.
Is this you making excuses for being 17 and a half minutes late for today?
That's why I was late today. But it's a serious thing. I think like when we have a second kid, I think that whiskey tastings are going to have to be less for me, I think, somehow. I just can't see it's going to be as possible.
I mean, I can't. The stress on Maria is going to be huge because I think I don't know what she's like in terms of like my missus takes control, like she is uber like boss mum. She's like, right. She's very strategic. This is what's going to happen. This is these times. You will fit around this schedule. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to do this. And she went, well, you're not. We'll fine. Yeah, you fit it in. So I can't even imagine how two would be. I've only been there 3 months and it's already like,
yeah, I'm genuinely
so
terrified.
Life changing. Like people say like how exhausting and stuff it is. And I was going, yeah, whatever. Like, everyone has kids. It can't
be that difficult.
No joke. If you're becoming a new dad soon or it's on the horizon, get ready because you're fucked. like life is going to change so much. I've never been so exhausted in my life. And I've worked shifts I've done. I'm used to work, going into work and coming home 3 days later tired. Not a patch on how I am right now and have been for the last 3 months. It's like Guantanamo Bay levels of torture.
Do you know what you should try, Mike, which might help?
Have a drink.
Dry January.
Go on hotel. yeah. You should try every other day, dry January 31.
Yeah, it is difficult for sure. I know some people. Well, I don't know about you two. You must know some people who are similar age who don't have kids. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was me. I'm an old new dad.
If you ever, because you get up, I don't know what time we get up, about sort of 7:30 latest, really. That's like latest. Some people have to get up at like 6 for their kids. But those people that don't have kids, they really rub it in. Basically, you're like, be speaking to them, they're like, oh, I'm not out of bed yet. What do you mean you're not out of bed? It's like 10 a.m. They're like, I'm just staying in bed, just hanging out, having a cup of tea. I'm like, you're missing out on life. They're like, no, this is what I want to do. I'm in bed.
I said to Lara, had to go to London the other day for work. So it was like daddy daycare from 6 a.m. And by 9:30, I'd done all the dishes, like 2 loads in the dishwasher. I'd done a load of laundry. I'd hoovered.
A medal.
But I was going, how? I've got so much done. I was expecting it to be about 3:30 and it was 9:30. I was like, yeah, what am I going to do for the rest of the day now? Like, it's mad how early.
The thing is, Mike, I'm not saying it gets better, but it changes. Because as they get older, they get less reliant on you. You know, they can like play by themselves. You don't have to give them 100% attention. But then the mental torture starts. Then it's the questions.
Oh, I thought this was the mental torture.
Oh, no. It's the
just talking continuously.
Constantly talking.
Constant talking.
You know, like, don't stick your hand in the fire. Why? What would happen if I stuck my hand in the fire?
Try it and find out.
Yeah, try it.
You know, it's constant. The talking.
Yeah. That's what I'm worried about with regards to the whiskey tasting and stuff. You know, they'll come more and more aware. You know, and yes, Eva just continuously talks the whole time. Like actually, one thing she does is, this is one thing that happens a lot. So if she's saying something and I'm trying to give an instruction, or, you know, we have to do this now, or come on, we need to do this now. If you interrupt her in whatever she's saying, she then gets really upset because then she says she can't remember what it was she wanted to say. Oh, and I'm like, yeah, no, but you have to, what? And so I'm trying to get her to understand that even though we obviously will listen to her. Sometimes when we're talking about something which we need to communicate, she has to understand that we have to communicate. We're about to do now. It could be anything, like trying to put, even just this evening, trying to put her to bed. And I think I had to go and I was trying to say something. She's like, you've made me forget what I was going to say. And I'm like, but
that was the point, Eva.
Well, it wasn't quite the point, but that, I think that's, and it's difficult because then she gets upset. You don't want to get upset, but, and you want her to feel listened to, but at the same time, you can't always 100% say, no, you just keep going.
What?
Just keep talking.
My theory about being a dad as well, like, I don't know if it's changed a lot from, if I think of my dad when I was growing up, I don't really think I spoke to my dad until I was about sort of 16. I don't really remember having that sort of interaction. He was very much old school dad. Like, don't get me wrong, there if I needed him or whatever, but conversations were never like free flowing. And yeah, you look back, that's the one thing I think has changed. Dads are now more accessible and they're all the time, and you probably pay more attention and listen to kids, whereas like my dad would have just shut me down like massively compared to like how you are with Eva. You're like, oh, I'm sorry, like my dad, like whatever.
That's the
thing. Definitely gonna end up a therapy session.
Go on. I was just gonna say, that's the thing you've always got to remember, no matter how tired or how drained or whatever, you only get that time once, right? So
yeah, that's exactly right. And you just, it's still the greatest thing.
Yeah.
No matter how tired you are, yeah, sure. But my dad was similar, like just
it's just a different generation.
But didn't talk that much. Say less.
Did you guys have, I think it's a generational thing as well. It's like, so my mum, as same as you guys are saying, did most of the looking after of the kids because my dad was like away working and things like that.
Same.
So my mum used to provide the discipline in our household, but it got to a stage, I remember, where I was like, okay, I know I'm not allowed to take a biscuit out of this biscuit tin, but what's the worst that's going to happen? My mum's going to shite at me, and she shites at me loads anyway, so it doesn't really matter. I'm just going to take this biscuit. But see, if your dad ever said, disappointed in you or something like that, that
crushing
cut deep, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the I'm disappointed in you is like the worst it gets.
Yeah.
Mine was just a fear of like dad, because you're like, right, I'm going to push the limits of mum because she's going to eventually like just cave and I'll get whatever I want. I'm going to tell your father, and I'd be like, oh no. and then he come in from work and I would just be upstairs going, do you reckon she's grasped? Do you reckon she's told him? Has she told him? And he'd be like, calm down. And he'd be like, oh, God, she's grasped on me.
getting called down to get disciplined. Yeah. I mean, like we got, these days you don't have any physical contact, but I got like back of the hand or, you know, slapped bum or whatever it was.
My
or,
parents deny all that it kind of stuff. To this day. Nope, we never touched you.
I remember
the fastest I've ever run in my life was running away from my dad up the stairs and getting a slap on the back of the calf. And I'm like, you're not catching me. No chance. But you ask him now, they're like, no.
Everyone has particular things that I remember. So my dad was obsessed with dog's mess. And it took me years. Two things. Because I also want to get to the positive. So I'll do two things that are negative and I'll do one thing that's really, two things that are positive. So... Because thinking about your own child, you know, as they grow up, right? So my dad was obsessed with dog's mess. I mean, literally obsessed. To this day, when he gets in, when he's going to go into the house, he takes off his shoes and he sniffs them. Really weirdly. He like sniffs the shoe to check. It's like so strange. So when we were walking around when we were younger, we would always be like neck craned down, like staring to spot any dog's mess. And it took me years to unlearn that so I could just walk like a normal human being, still aware of paths, but without having to stare at it like it was.
Did you walk like Mr. Soft because you didn't know how to walk as like without looking at the dog's shit?
I was conscious of things that were getting set into me. And so the other thing was, you know, like being obsessed about whether you've locked the doors or something. My dad will go back and check a door like 8, 9, 10 times, that kind of stuff. So I started to get into that habit as well. And then I had to purposefully unlearn it. So I'd be like, just get to the point and say, no, no, you've definitely checked it. You don't need to go back, and just try to like tone it down. Because otherwise I'd end up with like mad OCD. Because you can get it from habit, right?
Yeah.
Habits create habit. So that was the thing. Like, so positive things though, we always used to play cricket in the back garden, football. We had a great time playing sport, played tennis all the time. Loads of sport. Never with a, you must go and achieve this. Just, hey, it's fun playing sport, which I always thought was a really beautiful thing. Never being pushed. Always a bit competitive, but never like, you must do this or you must do that. It was just like, whatever, what do you want to play? Tennis, swimming, football, doesn't matter. Always great. And keeping it whiskey, I really, really cherished being able to try whiskey with my dad.
Yeah, like, man.
When I was getting into it. So as we were, I mean, the same in your first pint with your dad or whatever. It's special, isn't it? But I remember thinking at the time that whiskey was more special. And I don't know why. Maybe it's because he put it on a pedestal, right? But like, you'd have like this special bottle of whiskey, whatever it was, you know, like Talisker at the time or Ardbeg or something, right? And he'd be like, oh, this is really special. We've got this for this occasion. And then getting to try it and like sitting down and drinking it together at Christmas or whenever it was, like, you know, usually when it was colder. Like, I remember that. And I'm really looking forward to being able to do that with Eva. A yet to be named child.
Do you know that? It's really interesting. You say
little
that.
little Michael Michelle.
Go on, Ben.
There's, I don't know whether it's a recent thing. I think it's fairly recent, but there was a clip doing the rounds of the golfer, Padraig Harrington, and they were talking about being a dad and, you know, whether your children will follow in your footsteps because you're a professional golfer and this, that, and the other. And he just went, he didn't go off on one, that's the wrong phrase, but he went into this monologue about, look, take your kids swimming, playing golf, football training, whatever it is you do, but then go and take them for a wee tray bake or a bit of cake or something afterwards. Because actually, when your child's that age, it's actually not the golf or the football or the swimming or whatever. It's that just bit of time they'll always remember with their mum or their dad.
Time
where they
together,
got that
isn't it?
Time together, that 20 minutes after swimming, where you went and got a little treat and sat down. It was just the two of you for 20 minutes. And that really resonated with me because I've been guilty of, you know, taking our boy and sitting in a car park, waiting for him to finish, and then on to the next thing. And you just like, yeah, hang on, I'm just passing him from pillar to post here all day. I think he's doing loads of stuff, but he's not actually getting any time, despite the fact it's taking me all day to ferry him around these places.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really nice. It's a nice clip from Padraig Harrington, if you see it.
When you're finished, take 10 minutes to spend with your son or daughter. Go and have a Pepsi in the bar, wherever it is, and sit there, have an ice cream and spend 10-15 minutes, because if they have that 15 minutes alone time with you, just you and them, for the rest of their life, every time they play golf, they remember the 15 minutes they had with their father or mother.
I was going to raise earlier, but I got distracted. Music in the car. Right. So Ben's reacted with a, oh.
Yeah, so I got asked.
Duncan, you've been quite chilled with your response.
Just give her a phone and listen to whatever else you want to listen to.
So when I'm feeding Isla at the moment, I'm doing the Rolling Stones top 500 albums, and I'll put a new one on every day. Absolutely hammer her with music from like an early age. Every day, that morning feed, like probably it's normally 11sies, like Lara does the first one. I'll do the fun 11sies feed with Dad, music, playing random old stuff to her. And then when it comes to car journeys, there's going to be no CBBs, none of that shite. It is my music, my car, same as my parents did. I never had a music choice when I was a kid. Do you think I listened to I want to listen to like Thomas the Tank Engine in the car? My dad would be like, no, we had Guns N' Roses. Like, it is good music.
Very healthy lyrics.
I am going to like enforce that. There is no Frozen. There is no anything in the car.
Just I'm Night driving. Train again and again.
My choice. If mum's driving, do what you want. Can have
the thing is, it could backfire on you, Mike, because I had a situation the other day where I don't tend to play like albums or Spotify in the car. I just stick the radio on, whatever's on is on.
Yeah, we have radio as well.
But I got then caught in a situation where, and I can only think it was from the radio in the car, where our boy said in front of people, "Dad, what does sexy mean?"
Yeah.
Because he had picked it up from whatever song was on the radio.
Well, obviously, you were listening to
Bringing Sexy Back.
Obviously, that's what you listen to. Yeah, that's what you listen to every time when you're pulling up somewhere.
Yeah,
just to get you in the mood.
Yeah, it's my anthem.
Dad, what does wet ass pussy mean? Well, it wouldn't have been on the radio a few years ago, but now it's apparently that's a thing.
Yeah.
So do you two have for the old kids lined up? Do you have like a special bottle that you've bought for them when they were born or anything like that? Have you geeked out or have you not bothered?
No. So I think for me, I'm going to keep an eye out
Well, not born, but you know, like you could be anything, right? For you, yeah. Ben, it could be like, you know, you've bought a bottle for when they turn 18 or something like that, or I don't know.
I look out for date of birth whiskies was my thing, but Isla was born on a weekend and I rang a few distilleries and said, can you let me know what you're filling this weekend? And most went, we don't fill on the weekend. And I was like, damn it. So yeah, it's kind of gone backfire on me, but I will try and at least get hold at some point, probably in the next like 5 or 6 years, of at least month and year, and then go from there. But yeah,
right. Ben, I got a Longo 21 when Eva was born. I drank it.
Yeah,
I was going to keep it. I just drank it. So
I was going to say I'm not a collector of whiskey, so it doesn't. Yeah, no, it didn't even really cross my mind.
I don't know. You got a good collection behind you.
Yeah.
Yeah, if only.
Yeah. So would you buy a specific bottle at some point? Like, because I've always like earmarked the 18th, and I've always earmarked special occasions. Like, this is like my 40th. I'm going to open this one. I'm going to do this. Like, I've got a whiskey for my retirement from when I started my current job that was bottled in that year, and I will open that on my retirement.
But do you not think, and this is, people pan me for this because, you know, it's lack of emotion or whatever, but like, by that, if you have that bottle and you plan to open it on the 18th, on their 18th birthday, right, and I get the whole emotional connection to that, but you could probably sell that bottle of whiskey and put a deposit down the house for it.
I mean, if it was like something decent, but yeah, I think, no, I'm talking like just a bog standard whiskey, nothing decent, but it will get opened and shared with whoever.
Another one of those 1982 Royal Bells decanters.
Yeah.
That's what Mike's talking about. Bad. Ding, ding, that was horrendous.
Fucking shite. Yeah. I think we discussed special bottles before. I've always like kept.
I just think I'm like 50-50 on it. I feel like it would be a nice thing to do, but I just can't decide possibly what it would be. Do you know what? Maybe it'll be like maybe just open a Tamdu when they get to like sort of 17 or 18 or whatever.
Yeah.
Like a decent Tamdu.
I always try and get. It's rubbish, but
like a single.
I'll try and get people to no, like even way less than that. Like, so I'll get a Johnny Walker 18 when someone's turning 18, or Shiraz. Well,
Shiraz, nice. Shiraz.
Anything, just like an 18-year-old, just something for their 18th birthday. I'll buy them something. Right. So if they want to then open it and get disappointed in whenever, it's up to them. But I think special bottlings for an occasion just need to be opened and mulled rather than this something that's going to be worth money. Because
I have a sneak peek in the cupboard occasionally.
Drinking.
There's a lot of bottles, and I just kind of look at that and go, it's going to take a while. I mean, 30 days is a... Bimba kindly sent me that Christmas sample, the one that you got the other day. It took a while to get to me. Saturday, I was like, I guess it'd have to be like 2nd of February or something.
I've got to try it now.
I'm really up sticking to this.
Go and try it now and then buy a bottle of something else.
Right.
That would just make me happy. If you broke your dry January and bought a bottle, breaking the embargo.
It would make you very happy, but it's not going to happen. I am all week, I've had stuck in my head. Remember Calderac in the last episode? He did the Sauterne. So for the whole week, I've been going around, Sauterne around, Calderac. Every now and then you have a rant. That's all I've been singing to myself all week. I've been desperate to say it.
Do you know what I've been
and then I sing the whole of the Total Eclipse of the Heart song, basically, after that. I just changed that little bit to him going, Sauterne.
Do you know what is now one of my most commonly used phrases in the house? Horrendous.
Horrendous.
Horrendous. It's amazing.
Even when he said he didn't sound like GSP, all I could hear was GSP, like him going, I do not sound like GSP.
As you know, Duncan, I'm a big UFC fan as well, and he sounds exactly.
Oh yeah, you are.
He sounds exactly like GSP.
Did you say that? Did you actually think that was?
In fairness, I hadn't said it, but as soon as you said it on the pod, I was like, "Oh my god, yes."
Yes, we were we were inebriated, and I just went, I'm going to pick any clip, Mike. And I was playing like any clip. I just picked the first clip, and Mike's face was like, oh my goodness, yeah. Me. It is spitting. But maybe it's like we can't hear it because obviously we don't have French Canadian accents.
That's probably it.
Might sound entirely different to them, probably. But to us it just sounds really similar. So yeah. Fair enough. So Ben, we got like you know, you occasionally listen to the podcast. So someone suggested that we apply for BBC Upload or something, and we asked people
Paul Newkey,
that's it. Yeah, we asked people today which episode we should do, and it seems like most people were saying we should give a clip of the Jensen Button versus Sam Heughan episode. Any thoughts on that, Ben?
Well, I know that's your best performing pod, isn't it? But
there was a better pod, wasn't there? I don't know. There was one about going to whiskey festivals. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I mean, it was just when there's two or three parts to it, and you distill it down, and you've only got the best parts left, then obviously that content is going to do better.
Yeah, I can do the submission, Mike. I just submit the one with Ben on for Four Pound Whiskey Festival.
Or maybe
that'd be so funny.
Maybe it's about time, Mike. We released the one that we recorded in secret that Duncan doesn't actually know about.
Yeah.
Oh my God, is that true? I would be devastated.
No, we haven't got a secret backup episode to where you're not involved at all.
That would be so funny.
Look at the doubt in his mind now. He's like, have they done that?
Episode. Yeah. You're putting ideas into listeners. People that listen to this, they're all going to start doing their own episodes now. We're just going to have like, you know, like 20 people making their own Honest to a Malt episode. You're completely democratising it.
Just send it in. It'll save me editing. And
just everyone contacting BBC Upload in their various regions. Like someone lives in Norwich. They're like, oh God, I do this podcast called Honest to a Malt. Just sending in their own 5-minute clip.
I live in the Outer Hebrides. I've listened to a podcast. Does that count? Yeah, we'll play it.
Yeah, put it on. Yeah, 5 minutes of that.
I do like how like BBC Kent clearly like these are probably the only lads that have submitted anything.
Probably.
Whereas like London are going, we've got about 4,000 grime things. We've got everything else.
Yeah.
Kent though, like right one.
It'd be on at like 2 a.m. or something.
Does it sound like they got teeth? Decent. Are they racist? No. Good. Let's play it. This is whatever it is. We can play it.
Are they
BBC
talking about?
Kent. Coming in
is
your
there
ears.
any mention of people coming in for over the sea? No, okay, right. Put it on the radio then.
we used to do that. We in first year at university, we lived with a guy called Larry, and Larry got a slot on the Edinburgh University student radio show. And when we were out, he used to tell girls all the time, you know, I'm a DJ, like I'm studying at the minute, but I'm a DJ. And in the background, we used to go, hi, this is Larry. You're listening to Fresh FM. The time is 3:30
Fresh FM.
Fresh FM.
That could be the new episode title.
Yeah.
This is Larry. You're listening to Fresh FM.
The time is 3 a.m.
So, Ben, anything else you want to share from the world of whiskey recently? Because you often know a few gems, anything, any gold you're hanging on to here? You're thinking, oh, this would be good to talk about.
Do you know, it's not gold, because I'm sure everyone will have tried it, but I don't know whether it's the batch, and I really should have looked before coming on the pod, but I really got into a bottle of Campbelltown Lock just before Christmas. It was so much nicer than the previous bottle I had. It was just, I really got into it, and it was like, I liked Campbelltown Lock, but this bottle in particular, just with the batch variation, was just
the second batch or the third batch.
Do you know? I don't know. I didn't check before I come on, but
it's the dark one. It's probably the second one.
How can you tell?
It was the second one. It's a dark one.
Yeah, it's the second or third or whatever. I think they've definitely done two. Maybe they're onto three now. I think.
Definitely darker. This bottle, and it was good.
Yeah, good tip.
I saw someone today.
It was £35 on Aberdeen, wasn't it?
Yeah,
bargain.
Someone on YouTube doing a review of the Springbank Palo Cotardo.
Right, everyone's just saying it's great. I disagree, but
it's at bang average.
Yeah, bang average, exactly. But at least you're being honest. Other people are trying it, going, "Oh, it's amazing." It's not.
I literally went on and went. The review was like, "Oh, I'm so excited to do it." It was who posted it? the whiskey friend. Like, don't get me wrong, I like his videos and stuff, but he was making out that this spring bang, although it was same as me, really excited to get hold of it.
Obviously,
it was like you've clearly got carried away with whatever. But I can understand it though. I'm gutted. I was like, so yes, it's going to be amazing. That is distinctly average. Like,
I mean, it's okay. It's like, nice. I mean, it's
a decent whiskey. Don't get me wrong. It's still like the base is good. The finish is it's in palo, so it's like it's in my palate. But I built it up in my head because I've been so palo focused, and I was like, oh, wow.
But
like,
what you're learning is that palo's a hit and miss. I mean,
it is.
Like, it's a swing territory. If it's a Kalila, then
it
could be very good.
If it's a James E.D. Kalila, you're on to a winner.
Could be very, very good, yeah.
Actually, let's stop telling people about that.
I still know where two bottles are. So, but if they're still there after the embargo, maybe I'll buy one more.
Just buy them now and finish the embargo.
Let me know and I'll buy them and not give them to you.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
This is the other thing. The amount of people that are now offering
very competitive
to buy us bottles and not tell Duncan, for example. Like, I'll get that for you if you want.
And yeah, I said this before, but a neighbour's said, hey, do you want to give me a recommendation on what to buy? And I'll get one for you and you can have it, you know, later. I was like, I could do that, but that would be cheating.
Yeah,
I mean,
it would be cheating.
I mean, that's not in the spirit of the game, is it? I mean, I could just buy a bottle and lie, but that's also not in the spirit of the game. So the actual pain of not being able to shop on auctions or not being able to buy that, you know, that Glenkinchie, really winding me up.
I'm just putting my whole faith in tweet tastings.
I think I've done like 3 weeks now without buying a bottle. And for Mike, it's probably about 2 months or something ridiculous.
Is it 23rd of November? I think it was or something. So.
Is there any of these whiskey websites that have like Klarna as a payment system so you can like buy now and pay in 6 months? Does that
wouldn't count if it gets delivered now. That'd still be cheap.
There's no loopholes. There's no loopholes. The issue.
But how do you, I mean, I'm not competing versus on day, so it's not like... No, Mike stopped.
We went January 1st.
We're competing.
It's like dry January. You can just make up a date.
It doesn't matter how much whiskey Mike has. I cannot get my head around how he's managed to not buy whiskey since the 23rd of November. I mean, what's the longest you've gone, Ben, without buying a bottle? Recent years.
Probably 3 weeks.
Exactly. So to go, Mike's gone 5, 6, 7. He's coming up for 2 months. Right? Yeah, but that's unthinkable.
Look at...
It doesn't matter because it's always one you want. Yeah, but it doesn't matter, does it?
Delving. Like, to be fair, today before the pod, I went right. I'm gonna pick something out, and I went. No, I've had that quite recently. It's like, oh, I got nothing I haven't tried.
Right.
And I was like, So today I was very as probably like broken the back slightly. So now a temptation has crept in because. I'm not excited by anything I've got here at the moment. I'm eyeing up new stuff.
Can you imagine, you know, you walk into your whiskey room and you just go, oh, it's nothing I fancy. That'd be like rock bottom.
Well, I can.
It? I mean...
I can a bit because I think...
If you fancy whiskey and you walk in there and there's nothing you fancy, that's obscene.
It's always like, oh, well, okay, I'll settle for this single cask Laphroaig from fucking, that's like 19 years old or something. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of good stuff here, but I always want the new. It's FOMO. It's like a bit of ADHD kicking in. And like, I want the new thing and that I haven't got.
Oh, I've had a tally. I need to just rein it in for a bit. All right, well, thanks so much for listening today. Much appreciated, people. Mike?
Thank you for listening, and follow us on all usual places at Honest & Malt. Follow Duncan at Whiskey Tip, myself at Whiskey Wings, and Ben at Whiskey with Molly on all the social medias, and we will catch you on the next one. Bye-bye-bye.